Welcome to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen, and welcome.
Yeah, we're going to do a super fast intro this week because we've got so much to talk about.
Yes, and because we record the intro at the end. That's the secret that we have told you on multiple shows.
The secret is out.
The secret's out. Our first guest is Mike Murphy, the Associate Athletic Director at UNH. Murph, obviously always a treat to talk to. Gives us a broad perspective about UNH as well as minor league baseball. Then Hansen and I will talk a little bit about basketball, the Winter Olympics, hockey, and what is the best overtime. What else? Did I miss anything?
That covers it.
I think I got it all. So for the next 15 minutes or so, it's going to be Fox and Hansen and Murph on sports. We have Associate Athletic Director for UNH, Mike Murphy, joining us on the air. Murph, what's up?
Hey, thanks, Lauren. Great to be on Fox Radio here in Bedford. This is fantastic for me. What another privilege, and thank you for having me.
And now you can check it off the bucket list again, although you've already been on the show.
One more thing. My bucket's almost full. It's almost time for me to leave this world because I don't know what else I can accomplish.
It's true. Actually, we had a meeting to talk about food trucks literally an hour ago, which I think that might have been the last time I saw you out on a nice sunny Sunday enjoying some food truck fare at McIntyre. I can't wait for it to be warm again. After yesterday's 76 degrees, now we're about half that.
Well, that wasn't the last time I saw you. It undoubtedly was the best time I've seen you.
Oh my God.
Was a great event. I can't wait for it to come back.
Yeah.
Nobody loves food trucks like I do.
That's good. All right. So, yeah, the planning is thick. So, UNH kind of concluding their winter sports season, and basketball is kind of nearing the tournament time. But the big story at UNH these days is hockey and Coach Dick Umiele nearing the end of a 27-year career at UNH. Obviously, you've had a lot of time to spend with him on the air doing interviews and whatnot. What have been some of the biggest thrills or best memories that you've had with that hockey program in the time you've been there?
Yeah, that's a question I could take 20 minutes to answer, I suppose.
Sweet.
So I'll try to be brief about it. Certainly, just knowing Coach Umiele, this is 28th and final year. Just knowing the guy, I could tell you stories just about him. But the hockey program itself, I think my first experience with them, I was filling in as a radio announcer in 2008 when we went out to Colorado Springs in the NCAA regionals, and didn't work out well. But just how Coach Umiele made sure on the team bus ride to a morning skate to go, listen up, guys. This is Mike Murphy. He's with us today. He's a great guy. But he basically gave me some credibility with the guys who had no idea who I was. And he's been that way ever since I came to work here full time, which was 2010. The day I was hired by UNH, the very first email I received was from Dick Umiele. And to make it clear, I didn't know him that well at the time. We crossed paths because I did radio and I had covered some games, but he was the first guy to say, this is a great hire, welcome aboard. And to think he was literally the most famous employee of the university and the first one to welcome me, that's stuff that people just don't know about him. Unless if you know him as a person, you realize what a great guy he is, but he's the real deal. And that's why it's hard to imagine UNH hockey without him being here. There have been other good memories. You know, every other year we're fortunate enough, it seems, to host the NCAA Northeast Regionals in Manchester at the SNHU Arena. And the last couple, it's been weird because UNH hasn't been there. The ones before were just a blast. You spend 3 days, you kind of take over Manchester, a city where I used to work, and to see UNH hockey prominent with the other best teams in the country, those are great memories I won't ever forget from 2011 and 2013.
I was going to say, back in that 2011, you and I hanging out at what was then JW Hills, and the place was packed and the entire downtown was teeming with people who were there for that regional. Even as somebody who was kind of loosely associated with the whole thing, that's something I won't forget either.
Yeah, it's always a great event. You know, even last year when you bring four of the best teams in the country, but it's a different feel when UNH is one of those teams and you're in these downtown establishments and you're seeing the fans wearing their UNH jerseys, and they go back to before the Whittemore Center was even built and Snively Arena was the place. This has been New Hampshire's team forever, basically. If you think about sports fans of local teams, with all due respect to Boston sports teams, I get it, but for New Hampshire-based sports organizations that people grew up around, it's been UNH and it's been UNH hockey.
So we are here with Mike Murphy, Associate Athletic Director at UNH. for the uneducated, of which I am certainly one, who's in the running to replace Coach Umilli next year?
Well, it has already been decided.
There you go. I figured as much.
Yeah, this has been a transition period. Mike Souza, Mike, one of the all-time great players in UNH history, part of a team that went to a couple of Frozen Fours. He came over as associate head coach 3 seasons ago, and he has been learning from Coach Umilli and working aside him. He's taken over a lot of the recruiting aspects of it. So he's been doing a terrific job of staying in the background for Coach Umilli's final season, because we're celebrating the head coach, as we should. But we're expecting a rather seamless transition once this season ends to move into Mike as a guy who understands the game. He coached at UConn, and UConn has risen to power in Hockey East, especially late in the year, making a good run with players that he helped recruit to that program. And before right. then, he played in the AHL, you know, certainly played. He was drafted in the NHL, spent a lot of time in Europe. So he knows hockey, he's been around the area, and he understands, most importantly, what it means to be a UNH Wildcat.
It's always tough to get somebody in who's replacing the legend. I mean, you look at, sometimes it works and it works well, and sometimes there can be a real challenge behind that. You look at UCLA, they've been trying to find somebody to fill John Wooden's shoes since about the mid-70s with some success, but it is tough to be the guy after the guy, particularly when it's somebody who's iconic and really represents the program throughout the state.
Yes, you're right, and it is a daunting task, and it also can be difficult when the transition isn't necessarily embraced by the head coach. And I can give an example from what I could tell, not that I'm on the inside anymore, but I went to Syracuse University, got a degree somewhere there, but how long did Mike Hopkins wait for Jim Boeheim?
Yeah,
and Jim Boeheim is still there. Mike Hopkins eventually moved on to a different school, and now he's coaching at Washington. In this case, Coach Umilli was completely on board with Coach Souza coming in to learn from him. It's been a 3-year transitional period, and that is why I think this really has a great chance to be successful.
Hey, Mike, another question for the uneducated. What's the coaching style of Coach Umilli on the ice that Coach Souza is going to try and take forward with the program?
That's a good question, and one I guess I don't know yet. I don't really think Mike Souza has come out and said, I'm going to change this or do this differently. It's just not the time or place for him. But I know that from what he's learned from Coach Umilli is how to teach young boys to become men. You know, the idea that every single player comes into the locker room is as important as any player who ever came before, whether it's Jason Krog, won the Hobey Baker Award, or Bobby Butler, who just played for Team USA in the Olympics. Once the parents agree to let their kids come suit up as a Wildcat, the head coach and the coaching staff, their job is to turn these boys into men and help them move on in their careers, and that's the most important thing.
We are here with Mike Murphy, the Associate Athletic Director at UNH, and moving on from men's hockey to women's hockey, were you among the those who were up until 2 in the morning watching that gold medal game last night?
In a matter of speaking, I put the TV on at about 8, 9 o'clock, and in good Mike Murphy fashion, I fell asleep watching TV, so I was able to wake up in the third period with the game on and Canada leading by a score of 2-1. So I was there to watch the rest of it, and it was as fantastic as people were building it up to be. Because I love this rivalry. It's probably my favorite rivalry because women's hockey is growing in popularity, but it's still a two-country sport for the most part with the United States and Canada. And these are players who have been playing with and against each other going back 10, 15 years, and they're friends until it gets to be these international competitions, whether it's the World Championships or most certainly the Olympics. Then it's a situation where if you're in the same team hotel and the elevator opens up and you're an American and you see a Canadian player in the elevator, you don't get on, you know? And it's a fun rivalry, but boy, there's nothing they want more than to beat each other. And for the USA to finally get back to the gold after only winning it in 1998, the inaugural year, it was great. It was a lot of fun.
So obviously there was some UNH presence on that team as well.
Yeah, it's cool. Casey Bellamy has been an Olympian a few times, so she was out there prominently playing, a former Wildcat. On the other side, Jen Wakefield, who played at UNH before transferring to BU, she was on the Canadian team. And our current head coach, Hillary Witt, was an assistant coach on the U.S. Olympic team 4 years ago that suffered the heartbreaking loss to Canada And so she has been riveted by all this, just in time for her team hopefully to be motivated enough to take out their passion in these playoffs. They have a best-of-three series this weekend at Northeastern, and that's the quarterfinal round. And as it just happens to work out, Friday is a pretty good take if you're a UNH fan, which we all are, because the women, game one of UNH Northeastern at Matthews Arena, my favorite hockey arena in Boston, that's a 2 o'clock game. And then you have the regular season penultimate game for the men's teams. UNH and Northeastern happen to be playing at Matthews Arena at 7 o'clock, so should be a full day of great hockey in Boston Friday.
I see Hanson furiously throwing it into his calendar on his phone.
I know Matthews Arena. I went to law school at Northeastern, so it is a great spot.
It really is. The thing about Matthews Arena, and you can confirm or deny, from the outside, it doesn't really look like much, but once you get inside there, you feel the history. I mean, the Boston Bruins played here. Coach Umili, going back to him, he can't stop telling stories about being a high school player and getting there early in the morning to play and how packed the arena would be. And when the intermissions would come, there was doors in the back that would open up and everyone would run across the street to this bar, get a few beers, and come back and sit back in their seats before the next period started. There'd just be hockey all day, every day. And the arena's gotten some good renovations, but you can still feel the history of the place.
Yeah, you're right. You walking around Boston, you wouldn't really notice it or know it's there because there's other big buildings around, and it's not one of those hockey arenas that's completely above ground. So it's a little gem that is, you know, one of the amongst the many, many gems in Boston that you've got to know where you're heading.
So you there, Murph?
Oh, yeah, no, I was letting that one marinate because he's right. You know, sometimes when somebody says it best, Andrew nailed it.
Yes.
It's a place you have to check out if you haven't before. The history is second to none if you're a hockey nut.
So now you got me wanting to check this out as the non-local guy, but I'm very interested to see it. I also like the idea of running across the street to get beers, but...
Well, that place may not be there anymore, unfortunately, but the story, you can see the ghosts running to get their beers. I promise I'll find you a beer if you show up Friday.
All right, I like that. Here with Mike Murphy of the University of New Hampshire. Murph, gymnastics coming up senior night or senior day, as it were, at the Whittemore Center on the 11th of March. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, gymnastics in and of itself is just an awesome sport to watch. I didn't know much about it. I still don't know a lot about it, but I've watched this UNH team for 8 years now. And as far as an action,
I was going to say, I have a kid in gymnastics, and I've gone to I can't tell you how many meets, and I still have no idea what's going on. Like, something happens, I look at my wife, I go, "Was that good?"
What? Yeah.
Oh yeah, she stuck it. Okay, so you're telling me, but we can all talk like we are an Olympic commentator for gymnastics. They really stuck the dismount, or they really hit the landing. Like, but yeah, I still don't get it. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
It's all about sticking it. You know, I think that's what Cupcake used to say to Potsy and Happy Days. But in the case of gymnastics, it's a good thing to stick it. And the neat thing about March 11th is the meet is going to be at the Whittemore Center, and the University of Kentucky is part of this. So Kentucky, much like in basketball, they're a powerhouse in gymnastics. They're top 10 in the country. And if you've been over to see UNH gymnastics in the last decade, chances are you've seen it at Lundholm Gym, where the basketball teams play. Well, for the first time in 4 years, the WIT, with the four-sided HD video board, much nicer fan amenities, is going to host this quad meet. Yale is also in town. Brown is there. So gymnastics is great to begin with, but when you add four teams and four competitors at once, it is sensory overload. The music's blasting. People are cheering. And the whole thing takes about 2 hours, which makes it so great for families. You know, you say your daughter's there, Lauren, and there's so many young kids who are gymnasts come out, and they're part of the action from start to finish.
Yeah, I didn't know that was taking place, but I think it'll be good for people to know about it. There are a lot of people whose kids are involved in programs like that, but there, as you know, there's a certain aspirational thing for kids to go and watch somebody who's doing what they're doing on a bigger level or on a big screen. That can make a big difference for the kids, just saying, hey, I can do this too. You know, not to mention the fact that you're absolutely right. It never ceases to amaze me. You get to a gymnastics meet and you see all these gymnasts and you say, this is going to take forever. But somehow they have four disciplines going on. They bang through everything. You figure out who won and it's over. And you can kind of pick and choose what you watch while you're going through it.
And here's the thing about UNH gymnastics. We're celebrating Coach Umili in hockey for 28 years, and that's a remarkably long time. Well, the New Hampshire gymnastics coach, Gail Goodspeed, has been here more than a decade longer
Holy
than
cow.
Coach Umili. So she doesn't like to be reminded that this is her 39th year as a head coach. But her program has always embraced the local community. You always see the local gyms and the small kids involved in some way, shape, or other, sometimes running the scores from the judges to the official scores table, other times just taking part in the promotions in between events. But even the NHIAA held their gymnastics championships at Lundholm Gym before a UNH meet against North Carolina less than 2 weeks ago. So it was gymnastics all day long in this building, which was simply fantastic. It's been a nice pipeline. We've got some New Hampshire kids on the team. But really, there aren't that many Division I gymnastics programs in the Northeast anymore. So among the best end up at UNH, which, you know, fingers crossed, is a team that tends to make it to the NCAA regionals. And currently, there's 36 teams that make that. And UNH is 34th now, so they need a few more big scores. And to compete against someone like Kentucky is a good privilege. You don't usually get schools like that who travel to the UNH campus. Normally, much like in basketball, you'd have to go to their house in order to compete against them. So it's a good chance for fans to see the very best in the country.
Very cool. Well, we're certainly looking forward to it as well. And I think you and I need to make it a point to invade somebody's broadcast booth this summer.
Yeah, I would say the Fisher Cat season starting off, that 76 degree got me thinking about baseball.
Oh, my God,
again.
Did it ever. Now it's half
you
that.
You and I spent some time there, right? Yeah. Well, let's get back. Let's
I know. It. I think we could probably arrange that where we say, hey, just clear the decks, give your guy the night off. You know, Murph and I are taking over. We'll have Hanson in for a little bit of analysis. Like, I think this can all be done.
I'd love to do it against the Hartford Yard Goats as well. You know, a team I'd never had the privilege to broadcast against or from. It seems like a really cool stadium. Right next to the highway there in downtown Hartford.
I was going to say, have you been down there to see our old friend Tim Restall?
You know, we haven't crossed paths yet. He tends to avoid me, but again, I feel bad because we're UNH does play against UConn in hockey, and I make those trips. But it's one of those deals where I get in at 11:30 midnight and say, hey, we have a game tomorrow at 3. Do you have time to get breakfast? And much like you and others, well, you know, the kids have this, and that Saturday morning, so it's not going to work this time. But
yeah.
I vow to get down there and see a game because I've heard nothing but great things about what he's been able to do there in Hartford, and he's a dear friend to us because of our great memories on One Line Drive in Manchester.
The cleverly named One Line Drive, let's say.
And by the way, there is no two line drive.
I know.
I'm looking to mail anything there. It's going to end up at the stadium.
It will get there. So, all right, well, we wanted to thank our guest, Mike Murphy, the UNH Associate Athletic Director, for joining us here today. And hopefully we'll see you out at the WIT on March 11th for the Senior Day for Gymnastics.
Sounds like I've already written three things down. I'll see you at the hockey game at Northeastern Friday.
Yep.
And we'll see you at Gymnastics March 11th. We're going to have a Fisher Cats game and then the food truck. So,
and food
Lauren,
trucks.
You and I are going to spend a lot of time together.
Oh, absolutely. I will not be able to make it to Northeastern on Friday, and this will air after that anyway, but I will not be down at Northeastern on Friday. However, the other three things are done. And if we ever decide if we ever decide to road trip down and go see Restall, I would endorse a Hartford Yard Goats game as well. That's a mouthful, though. I can't get that out.
Well, the peasant road trip we're looking forward to getting down there. We'll thumb our way down if we have to.
We will thumb, yeah. Awesome, buddy. All right. Thanks, Murph. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
That was UNH Associate Athletic Director Mike Murphy. I can't get that title right. I can't get Fox on Sports Hot Stove Report right, but regardless, we'll be okay. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I got that right. Back after this. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and now thinking, because Hanson stayed up too late last night, so he's in some kind of a caffeine-induced haze.
I am.
As it were. I fell asleep watching. As far as I knew before I woke up, I would have thought that Lindsey Vonn would have won the gold medal in the combined, but apparently she missed a gate and did not. And I would have thought that Mikaela Shiffrin was out. Based on her performance in the downhill. But
she was not.
She was obviously anything but out.
She was on the podium.
So, but with any of that,
the highlight from last night, and we're recording this on Thursday, so that's Wednesday night into Thursday, women's hockey. And
U.S. Canada.
Yeah, and we have had all kinds of opportunity on this show so far in the last couple months to talk to people associated with hockey, whether in this town or elsewhere. And one of the stories, and it's funny, I'm working on something for a client right now where a Boston Bruins player is coming to their place in about a week and a half. But to go along with that, the girls' hockey team will be there at that event. And they're very excited to be there and meet Tim Schaller, who's a player for the Bruins. And I was emailing with one of the mothers on the team who's going to coordinate this whole thing about what a great group of kids that team has and really what a success story it's been when you consider that it was Maddie, Luke, and Tony, and you wrote down a couple of other names, Kendall Cassidy as well. A handful of the kids had had some hockey experience. A bunch of the kids had never skated before.
Yeah, and I had the
or barely skated.
Right, and I had the pleasure of watching their season finale last Saturday against BG. And, you know, I'd heard these stories. We talked to Coach Fifield. We talked to local hockey expert Steve Tempesta. And so I wanted to see for myself.
Nobody knows why we're laughing. If you know Tempesta, you know why we're laughing.
So I wanted to see for myself, you know, how this program looked. And it was better than I expected because, you know, they skated well, I thought. You know, there were some skaters on BG that didn't skate that well. And Bedford looked like a match in terms of, you know, skating and team movement. So they obviously have made great strides this year under Coach Fifield. You know, you mentioned Maddie, Luke, and Tony and Kendall Cassidy, and they really anchored the defense, which is great for a hockey team to have those, you know, two of the few who have a lot of hockey experience anchoring the defense, and they'll be back next year as well because Maddie's a junior and Kendall Cassidy's a freshman. But Luke and Tony had an amazing defensive play during this game. The puck was deflected. It had been a save, and the net was open, and the BG player was rushing in to score. The puck was only about 3 feet from the net. So it was, and from my angle, you know, the net was wide open. The puck was just sitting there. You know, the goal was imminent. But Luke and Tony dives across the crease and, you know, pushes the puck away just before the BG player gets there, is saving a sure goal. And then Maddie went on to score the team's only goal that day. So she had some great plays. But you mentioned sort of their character and the group of girls. And at the end of the game, it was a really special moment where they all came over to the crowd and they're banging their sticks on the ice. And it was sort of a mutual greeting and celebration and recognition between the fans and the players, you know, kind of capping the season. It was a really great moment.
Well, it's one of those things about hockey, and we've seen it with our friends who have kids who play hockey. When you play hockey, it's not just you playing hockey. There are other people who are involved in this process. Because don't forget, these girls have to be up at Everett Arena for 5 a.m. for practices, which means if you don't have a driver's license, mom and dad have to help you. Mom and dad probably have to help with something somewhere along the way for you to be involved in this program. So it's always nice when a team comes back and salutes. I will never forget, and we may have talked about this at one point, 1998 World Series, Padres had just gotten swept by the Yankees. They couldn't get the fans to leave. I don't know if it was Jack Murphy or Qualcomm Stadium at that point, what iteration it was. I know it wasn't Petco, but they couldn't get the fans to leave, and the players had all left the field, and the players came back and started grabbing the PA mic and talking to everybody. And to me, I don't remember squat about what happened in the game outside of the fact the Yankees won, but it was just the fact that there was this interaction and this genuine love between the players who were on the field and the fans who were in the stands. And it's rare that you see that and see it acknowledged. The other thing that's cool, and I'm not going to say I'm a hockey guy, but I've played adult men's league hockey, not well. The hockey culture is really there is a give and a take. It is a super strong culture, and being on a hockey team is, it's a unique experience. A goalie makes a great save and you're leaning over the boards and smashing your stick into the boards
right.
as a way of saying, hey, buddy, nice job, even though you just got burned and now we're down 8-0. There is a very strong culture to go along with that sport. I'm happy that you have these kids that, in Maddie, Kendall Cassidy, and the others who were involved with it, who these kids had been indoctrinated with it. They loved it to begin with. They got to share that with their friends, and their friends got to share that with their families, and they had a wonderful experience out of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Those organic moments that, connect a program or an organization, if you're talking about a professional team, are really special. And it is a little bit different in hockey. There's just something unique about the sport that is you can't look down on it or criticize it. It's something special and positive. It's just unlike any other sport. You know, I mean, you just see it even in the NHL, the way players, conduct themselves during interviews.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're born from the same family, the way that they answer questions. And it's team first. You know, it's the mentality of, you know, especially at that level, it's like, you know, you get three teeth knocked out, you're back the next period.
Or you break a leg and you keep playing. Yeah.
Right. It's just incredible, you know, how hard you play, how hard you practice, how much you have to put into it, and how dedicated everybody is to be out on the ice supporting each other.
So speaking of that, the girls won in overtime last night. The girls, they're women's hockey program for the USA. And congratulations to them, as Mike Murphy pointed out earlier in the show. The first gold medal for the women's hockey team since 98 in Nagano, which I guess was conspicuous as the year that the men's hockey team destroyed their living arrangements in Nagano. But the women picked up that win last night. And
By shootout. Yes.
And you may remember, if you've listened to this show week upon week, as we know you have, you may remember that... back when
in the fall of 2017
we were part of or had the opportunity to see the girls hockey program or the girls soccer program lose in double overtime, or I guess a shootout as well, to the Little Green of Central. And at that point in time, we had talked to Michelle Winning, who did a wonderful job with the program, and just kind of how does that make you feel, like you've gone through a long time, a protracted game, and it ends like that?
Right. In that instance, it was the shootout in soccer with the penalty kicks, shootout in quotes. So, the Bedford girls went down by penalty kicks. And, of course, in hockey, it's called a shootout.
Yeah, I guess PKs is the proper terminology.
Right, right. Right. So it's a unique way to finish off a contest when the championship is on the line. And that's what happened last night with the U.S. women's hockey team after a riveting overtime, a 20-minute overtime.
Right. That's where I kind of the one-to-one, does the one-on-one make you determine that you're a better team? That's my fundamental challenge with it. Like, if I'm deciding who the better team is, I'm factoring in a number of things, one of which is the team's stamina and focus. And the stamina and focus, to me, are magnified when you get deep into overtime. Because if somebody doesn't have stamina, endurance, it will show more so than it will early in the game. And their intensity and their drive... And I understand that the amount of focus that's required in a shootout is beyond anything that I can muster. But when you look at it, to me, it seems weird that the game ends like that. And even if you were to go to every 10 minutes we're going to drop a player on ice, and so instead of a 6-on-6, now you're 5-on-5. And I realize that that's not the same game either, but it feels to me like more of a representation of the game than a goalie and somebody shooting on the goalie.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And just within hockey, it's different by sort of context. In the NHL regular season game, you have a 5-minute overtime period and then the shootout. in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you just play until somebody scores.
Right.
So they take it out. And, you know, there's nothing like a playoff series in hockey that is going to be decided by a goal, whether it takes us three overtimes or four or five.
Right.
You know, I guess, you know, the NHL makes the decision that during the regular season, we can't have games, you know, we can't have a 0-0 game going on for, you know, eight periods in the regular season. We'll do it in the playoffs, but we're not going to do it in the regular season.
Right.
But here in Olympic hockey, instead of the 5-minute overtime, you do get a 20-minute overtime, and it's 4-on-4, you know, skaters with the goalie, so you have five on the ice, but 4-on-4, so it's wide open hockey, and on the Olympic ice is wider, so you've got a huge area here. You know, chances are you're gonna get a goal with 4-on-4 for 20 minutes, and there were a lot of great opportunities last night. Nobody converted, so they went to the shootout, which, you know, maybe it's not what you want in terms of, you know, that stamina endurance you're talking about, and let's settle this with a goal as the game is always played. But if you saw the game-winning goal by Jocelyn Lamoureux, it was a fantastic move. I mean, it was just beautiful. And then, you know, 20 seconds later, the U.S. goalie, Rooney, makes the save to win it. And so it was still like action-packed, you know, fast-moving, dramatic. So it worked for me because they had that 20-minute period that was exciting. You know, it wasn't just like a 5-minute overtime and then we're going to go to the shootout.
Right. And 5-minute overtime can be a little bit artificial as well. I do like the fact that it's a 20-minute period. I like the fact that the NFL, speaking of ties, the NFL has modified it so that if you don't get the ball first, you still have a chance to answer back. You think about how good kickers have gotten in the NFL, the overtime in the NFL had largely been decided by coin flip.
Right.
It seems like they've come up to a good place there where, hey, we're going to go back and play 15 minutes. Each team gets a possession. If you score a touchdown first time out, hey, you win.
That's what I don't like. I think the NFL has gotten closer. You know, college football has a great setup.
Ugh.
Each team gets it. You know, you get a chance to match, and then eventually you have to go for two.
I do like that.
Yeah.
I think the getting it on the 25-yard line to start with is kind of artificial.
It is. But, I mean, if you put them at the, you know, 35 or 40, you know, then you might go multiple overtimes with nobody scoring.
Right.
You know, at 25, you're very likely to score because you're going to be in field goal range.
But what does that do to the lines that are set?
Well, it blows them out of the water.
Oh, yeah, the game just went to overtime. The total was set at 38. The one team has 38 now.
I mean, literally, you can get six or seven overtimes in college football. So it can be a little bit excessive. But the alternative is in the NFL, like you said, you win the coin flip, you go down and score a touchdown, game over. The
right.
other team didn't have a chance.
I see what you're saying. I don't mind that. I also, if we're talking about baseball, I do like the way baseball obviously is set up with the extra innings, as long as Bud Selig decides that it's not just going to be a tie.
Right.
Can
we agree that that is the one rule that just has to be, that no matter what game we're playing, if it's, I mean, you can't just have a tie.
I hate ties. Okay. We even third and fourth grade girls basketball, Libby's team, maybe two or three ties, and you walk out of it, and you're like, I feel like I need to shower.
Well,
like,
especially in basketball.
Yeah.
Because basketball is the highest scoring sport.
Not for third and fourth grade girls.
but you can play how about just another 2-minute overtime? You know, somebody can score a basket.
Right.
You even have the golden goal, so to speak, in basketball. First basket wins, fine. You know, but you got to break the tie. This is basketball.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree with that. The way that baseball is set up is awesome. The thing that ruins it, or at least ruins it in the 2018 version of baseball, is a lot of these managers. Got Dave Roberts in the World Series last year pulled Rich Hill, who was working on a gem after like 4 1/3 innings in game two, and started to go to the bullpen. And where does that leave you if you get deep in a game and you're in trouble? Well, even if you have a pitching staff of 12 guys, if everybody's got their role and somehow the other team comes back into the game, suddenly you're in extra innings with the next day's starter pitching.
Yeah.
It just fouls things up.
It does a little bit, but I mean, let's not feel too badly for these guys because, you know, there's always the position player that you can put out there. And so if the manager makes the decision early in the game, I mean, if the manager wants to pull Rich Hill, even though he's pitching well in the second or third inning, you gotta face the consequences. And if you guys, if you can't stretch your relievers out to two innings when they're, you know, used to pitching two or three outs, then that's what you're going to have to do if you get into a 14 or 15 inning game. You're going to have to put one of your position players out there.
Right.
And baseball, there's enough scoring that you don't typically see an 18, 19 inning game. You know, there was the crazy minor league game that was, 30?
Pawtucket and Rochester.
33 innings yeah. Was Wade Boggs in that game?
Yeah, Wade Boggs, Marty Barrett, Cal Ripken Jr. was in that one, yeah.
I mean, and only baseball. I mean, that's just what a story.
That's the theoretical possible. If you go down to the stadium in Pawtucket, there's an exhibit set up specifically dedicated to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, that's just awesome. You know, tennis is the other sport that you can see that in.
Oh,
like with
I love that, though.
Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Wimbledon, you just, fifth set, you just play until somebody's up by two. There's no tie break in the fifth set. And I kind of like how in tennis and golf, based on the event, the rules are different. So in Wimbledon, last set, you play forever. You know, other majors or grand slams, you do win by tiebreak.
Yes.
In golf, the different majors have different rules. You know, sometimes it's a four-hole, I think the PGA is a four-hole playoff. British Open, three. US Open,
you play 18. Which is, there's nothing better than that, though.
On like, Monday, right?
Two guys going out on Monday and just playing 18 holes of golf for all the marbles.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, maybe one of them on a, you know, torn ACL. Tiger's last major back in 08. So I think that's kind of fun in golf and tennis where you get, you know, different rules based on the event.
Yeah, I like how tennis has it set up with baseball. There's, for my money, there's not a whole lot better than you get the position players on the mound looking like a fish out of water. But you figure all these guys have pitched at some point in time, just like all the pitchers have played positions. I mean, right. It's not like these pitchers were emerged from the womb as pitchers and never did anything else. Most of the guys who were pitchers in the major leagues, if they didn't pitch, they were playing shortstop.
Right.
When they were kids, and they just haven't done it in a while.
They had to go through a progression of being on baseball teams and going through the drills that everybody goes on. You know, you don't just, as a 10-year-old, show up at the field and pitch and then go home.
I'm a left-handed one-out guy. I'm
going to throw my bullpen and then go home, coach.
I'm just here for the lefty-lefty matchup. I'll see you later.
Right. I'll see you next Saturday.
Yep. I faced my one batter. I'm good. I didn't let any of my inherited guys in. I'm all set.
You got to develop into that specialty.
So, yeah, for my money, the bonus baseball is the best of the best. But I don't know. I really, if somebody said, yeah, baseball, because of the way specialization is working out, we're going to go to a home run derby format for extra innings. To me, that's what the shootout or PKs feels like. It's a contest that grades something different than the first 60 or 80 minutes of a game. I don't know. That may not be the best analogy for it, but it's a little bit different. So with that said, though, congratulations to the women's hockey team. Congratulations to the UNH products who were part of that program. It's pretty cool. As a resident of this great state, it's always fun when you see somebody on TV and they have New Hampshire ties because we're little compared to everybody else.
Right.
Like everybody else has their throngs of people. We don't have our throngs of people. So I want to celebrate that where we can. So with that said, we'll take a quick break, come right back and, talk about some other fun stuff that, yeah, you don't know yet, but you will in a couple minutes. Back after this, Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox alongside Andrew Hansen. And I know that I've gotten dozens of emails from people asking, hey, Fox on Sports guy, who won, not the NBA All-Star game, but who won in the Fox versus Hansen good guys versus bad guys contest?
So you probably haven't answered any of those inquiries because of
bad.
The answer.
The answer is I lost.
You did. But before we really go into that, let's give you credit because I tried to, push the topic to the side, but you were the superior prognosticator during the NFL playoffs.
Yes.
Okay, so let's give you some credit. This
where
is not,
credit is due.
All right, it is due. So we'll give you that. Now let's quickly turn the page and let's explore what happened during the NBA All-Star
yes.
game because you are right. The good guys, from the Hansen perspective, outscored the bad guys on Fox's team that we drafted on air,
Oh, yeah. We had some injuries along the way, though.
We did, but both of us had two injuries. So we took the natural replacements.
Yes. I lost Boogie, though. That was big.
Yeah, you lost Boogie, but you got Paul George, and he scored 16 points.
Yes.
You lost the unicorn to a freak knee injury.
Yeah.
And you got Kemba Walker, who contributed 11 points off the bench.
Yes.
Not too shabby. I, on the other hand, lost John Wall, picked up Andre Drummond, who only had 2 points at half, but he scored 12 in the second half on a variety of dunks and layups, as you might imagine. No free throws.
Yep.
And then I lost Kevin Love, and my lefty replacement, Goran Dragic, only scored 2.
Yep.
So that was sort of a wash. What really hurt you was that Jimmy Buckets, who
yeah.
I think was your 7th pick.
Yeah, that was bad.
Didn't play. He didn't step on the court. He was under the weather, so he decided, I'm just going to be the cheerleader. Didn't step on the court. But here's what happened in terms of the actual totals. All right, so my guys, after the first quarter, were up by 15.
Yep.
You got...
I love that you kept track of this as it went live.
Yeah,
live
I kept
scoring.
I kept my box score. I mean, it made it interesting. You know, scribbling fast and furious with all these buckets with the back to back. What am I trying to say here?
What?
The back and forth action.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
It's true. Yes.
So the second quarter was all about Lauren's back and forth action because
yep.
his guys put up 49 in the second quarter. Now here's what was really interesting at halftime. The score on the scoreboard at Staples was 78-76, Team Steph. The scoreboard of Fox Hansen was 78-76, Team Steph, which was drafted by Lauren Fox.
Yep.
So it was 78-76 in the real game and in our game. But in our game, it wasn't the same players.
Right.
We didn't pick them as they were in the end. We picked our own Team Steph and Team LeBron.
But we don't know that we didn't pick it in... give or take, close to the same order those guys picked theirs.
With the starters, we did. I think
okay.
you could kind of work it out that there was only about one difference
yeah.
for our starters. it ended up being that,
This is an insight into Hansen's mind.
Yeah, this is fascinating to me. We basically drafted like LeBron and Steph. We'll just summarize it that way for the starters. The bench worked out a little bit differently. But Curry came out and said that he was really trying to draft three-point shooters.
Yep.
At least, I think, for the subs. And, you got some of those. You got Clay and Lillard and Beal. So you kind of had the same mindset. But anyway, in the second half, it was neck and neck after the third quarter. Fourth quarter, my guys took over because I had the starting five for Team LeBron. So LeBron, Durant, Kyrie, and Westbrook, gave the final push offensively. So my guys won 153 to 140, and Team LeBron, in reality, won 148 to 145. So, Lauren, I got to talk to you about what happened on the court because, we were focusing here on the offensive end.
Right.
Because in our fantasy game, what we did was we just totaled up the points that were scored.
Yeah.
And that's what usually happens in an All-Star game. It's all about scoring.
Right.
It's all about the offensive end. Defense is not part of the equation. But in this particular All-Star game, it sure was. So, what we should do is
Do a little bit of haiku?
I think we probably should.
Yeah, we can do that. We don't even have to have a reason.
Did you see the defensive play at the end of the game that sealed it for Team LeBron?
I did not. You were trying to describe it to me. And then, as always happens in Bedford, you lose cell service everywhere you go.
Right, so we'll just have to do it this way.
We're going to have to do it this way.
First, we're going to get an insight into the All-Star game. All right, here we go. This really gets me going. I like this background music. Thank you. Ready? Here we go. Steph watches Team Steph eating from box of popcorn. All-Star game choices. Passing weave in paint. Westbrook to Kyrie to Braun. Gives Team Braun late lead. Scrambling LeBron swoops in on Steph squaring up, needing three to tie. Steph opts to go right, only to find Durant there, his teammate turned foe. Chase around the arc puts pivoting Steph in trap, LeBron and Durant. Durant follows ball to DeRozan in corner, buzzer approaching. Smothering Durant brings sights and sound of a win. All-star game defense.
That was a nice haiku, by the way, and I think that is a marketable thing, this sports IQ. We have to figure out how we can do something with this skill that you have. I can come up with very crass haiku. Yours actually are poetry. But you think about that, though, what is defense about?
Well,
what is defense about?
Well, the first thing, it's about effort. But the first thing you think of is, well, defense is about championships. Defense wins championships. And in this case, defense won the All-Star game.
Right.
Because you've got this amazing shooter, Steph Curry, out there. All he needs is a three-pointer to tie. But who jumps out on him is LeBron. He goes around LeBron, and who's waiting? It's Durant. And then he continues around the perimeter, turns around, and then he's being trapped by LeBron and Durant, these 6'9"-plus guys with these crazy wingspans. So he has nowhere to go. Gives it to DeRozan, and then Durant's over there, and he doesn't even get a shot off before the buzzer. The buzzer sounds, and it equals the win for Team LeBron.
So think about it, though. LeBron's last championship, what won that championship? What one play do you remember?
Kyrie Irving's three-pointer.
No, the play that I remember is the block.
The block, right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's those two.
But I guess I'm going to make the contention. I don't know that defense wins championships as much as players who have the mentality to play good defense are more likely to win a championship because of the level of intensity that they bring and the level of effort that they bring. Defense just happens to be a byproduct of a type of player.
I like that because it's about a mentality.
Yeah.
The mentality is I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. So on defense, I'm going to give whatever effort it takes to, you know, close out on that shooter, get that block, get that steal, get that rebound.
Draw a charge. It's always the little things. It's never the big things, but it's right place, right time. It's a matter of using your brain in addition to using your body. And defense, you never, occasionally on offense, you get he just summoned a little bit more right then. Usually it's the defense when a guy is just toast and bent over, you know, clutching his knees, grabbing his shorts. All right, then now's the time that the guy steps up and makes a stop and kind of figures out what he's made of. Already knows what he's made of, but hey, I'm going to put in that little extra effort on that one last play. In sports, I think you see that far more than you see the running back kind of pushing for one extra yard or... You know, sometimes you see it on offense in baseball. If a guy's trying to get to the plate, the level of intensity that he's got when he's trying to get there, trying to score. I mean, there was a great shot last year, George Springer sliding into home head first, where he's like Bobby Orr sliding in. But the level of intensity and desire that's required to play defense, that is more of a winning mentality than... You can throw a nice dunk out there, but in order to win, you have to be completely committed. In order to play good defense, you have to be completely committed. They go hand in hand.
Yeah, and to use your Cavaliers example, you're right. LeBron's block on Iguodala what an amazing play. It saved the championship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Iguodala was way ahead of him. He's going in for a layup or a dunk, you know, to expand the lead. And we're talking last 2 minutes, and it would have put the Cavs completely behind the eight ball. LeBron comes in out of nowhere with that crazy block.
Yeah, and not to have a goaltending in that situation either. Yeah. Because it really
could
have
easily. It was above the rim.
That was literally a tenth of a second from being a goaltend.
Right. And he's above the rim making that block.
Yeah.
Just an incredible athletic play. And we never have Kyrie Irving's three, probably, unless he makes that play.
Right.
So you're right. Defense was the difference there to set up the offense. And to your point, it the extra effort, you know, maybe the reason why it happens where you notice that on defense is because on defense, you put in more effort, it can actually translate into success. You know, on the offensive end, if you try harder, it doesn't necessarily make you better.
Right.
Right? We talk about it all the time in baseball. You can't get tense and try to hit the home run. It just has to happen naturally. So you don't see it as much with the extra effort. But defense, it does translate into success.
So with that, should we take a break, come back for our last segment?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So we're going to take a quick break, come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I think we're going to skip the Fox Hot Stove Report because maybe eventually I'll remember what it's called just because we're talking about other stuff today.
Yeah, we can talk about how J.D. Martinez looks.
I was going to say.
In a couple weeks, you know, once we get him out on the field down in Fort Myers and see what he looks like with the Red Sox uniform on.
Such a weird year. Like Mike Moustakas without a team.
Huh.
Yeah.
What do you know?
38 homers last year and I have as much of a major league contract as he does right now. Bizarre. Huh. So that was the Fox Hot Stove Report. There you go.
Collusion, anyone?
yeah, or just the fact that Scott Boras is his agent. Neither here nor there. So we decided we would talk about the Olympics, and I think this is possibly going to be a segment, the top five blank of all time. Right. And I only have five this time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm disappointed too. So top five Winter Olympic sports. We're going 5-1.
Let's.
Okay. So, I got number five, bobsled.
Okay.
It was a kind of a toss up here between bobsled and ski jumping. Ski jumping continually amazes me, but I love the athletics of bobsled. I also love the, and not to dismiss anything the bobsledders do. I also considered skeleton just because it sounds absolutely bad hyphen you know what, but anything called skeleton that's not a Halloween costume. But bobsled, I really like the fact that you can translate other athletic skills into that. Herschel Walker,
because you've got the sprint,
you've got the sprint and the strength,
yeah,
and which is it's pretty cool. And the whole Jamaican bobsled story also, right. Yeah, you can't get away from that.
Right. My number five is curling.
I knew that was going to be on there.
I mean, it had to be. You had to slide it in. One of us had to.
Yeah, you know, I didn't have it.
Sarah and I had a discussion about whether it should actually qualify as a sport.
Oh, yeah, it should.
And I think it does, because what you do is you have something that is moving through the atmosphere and you're in control of it. You know, you make this object move through the atmosphere, you know, towards a target.
Yeah.
So I think it counts as a sport, and it's just so unique. I mean, whoever, you know, would have dreamed it up.
Well, especially
if you don't live anywhere near the north where there's ice and snow, like people from the south must look at this and just think, who are these crazy people up north?
Like, I can justify pretty much any sport, and you can sit there and go, oh, they didn't have anything to do when it was the winter and they had a gym, so they put up baskets and threw things into it, because we all throw our trash away and like, hey, I'm right. trying to make a basket. And right. I have a feeling people would have done the same, or hitting a thing with a thing, or strapping boards to your feet and going down a mountain, or even standing on a board and riding a wave. Like, those are all logical and rational. My brain cannot get around how I'm going to take a stone and you're going to take a broom.
Right.
What?
and we're on our way to a sport.
And this is a sport. Okay. But I have no problem with it being a sport. I just don't. The genesis of it is confusing to me. Number four is ice hockey.
Okay. That's a little higher on my list.
I had hockey lower just because hockey is, to me, the thing that brings it down. It surrounds us all the time. Some of these other sports you don't get on TV all the time. So there's value for me in the fact there's the scarcity principle.
All right. So that one, the scarcity principle applies to my number four, which is the snowboarding half pipe.
Okay.
You know, Sean White's performance was incredible.
Yeah.
And he's doing something that I don't think I can do. I'm a decent skier.
I tried
to snowboard once. It was a terrible, miserable failure. And so to see him doing these 1440s 20 feet off the half pipe is just incredible and entertaining. And so it made number four for me.
I am very challenged by all that stuff. I can ski
very well.
Very well. Snowboard, I can snowboard passively. I grew up skating and surfing. Used to be able to do tricks on ramps. But you throw me into a half pipe and say, go do something, I'm going to ski up and down the sides. Like, I'm... It's ridiculous.
You make your own sport.
I make my own sport, and it looks completely ridiculous. So, and then some of the dudes that do the skiing tricks in the half pipe, and I saw it twice last night. They come up, and they come back down, and they catch their skis, and you're like, it's a torn groin and a torn ACL all at once.
Right.
Like, how's that for a combo platter? Ugh, bad. Number three, short track speed skating.
Did you read my paper?
No, you had that.
Those are the words I have
clack,
down
clack,
for,
clack, clack, clack,
for number
clack,
three.
Clack, 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 clack. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, just crazy.
It's demolition derby.
Yeah,
it's really awesome.
Really fun to watch.
Number two, I separated short track and speed skating into two things.
Okay,
but I really enjoy just kind of the grace of speed skating.
I do too.
And I mean, we grew up with some great ones, Dan Jansen, and all the stories that went along with him, Bonnie Blair. There was Eric Heiden, if you go back to 1980, there were some really iconic speed skaters, fun to watch and something you watch it every 4 years. It is a treat to watch.
Yeah. My number two is downhill skiing.
Okay.
Just because of the speed.
It's bitching.
You know,
I love it.
The only way you can win is if you just completely go after it.
Yep.
And you send it. Right?
Send it.
is that the terminology?
You're talking like one of them kids. Yeah.
So that one's fun to watch. That's number two for me. What's your number one?
Downhill. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
And just to watch them dig their edges and like even out here, we're used to skiing on ice. But you go out west and you ski on powder and you see what a track looks like on powder. Even in the morning, if you're digging your edge, it goes away like a breeze blows it away. You look at the downhill track. And there are just edges dug into that thing. Like they are going down it basically on ice.
Right.
And really digging. Digging ruts in the thing. And for Lindsey Vonn to do what she did with a blown out sidewall on her ski. Like, I mean, I did that last year.
In like a minute and 39 seconds entire mountain?
I brought my skis in to get tuned. And the guy goes, I can't tune these skis. I go, why? He goes, because you blew out the sidewall. I go, what? Yeah, and sure enough, looked at the skis, and I said, well, can you fix it? I can't fix it. So they're talking on TV last night about, oh, yeah, you can do X, Y, and Z. I'm like, I don't really think you can.
Right, right.
But, yeah, downhill skiing is, for my money, the amount of intestinal fortitude. You use the skiing apps, you can tell how fast you're going. Like, if you're going in the 50s, you're feeling it.
Right.
And for them to be pushing the speed limit on 93, if not more.
That's intense.
That's hairy. And you fall, and it hurts going that speed.
Right.
Your number one.
Is hockey.
Hockey, yep. Yeah.
Maybe because it's the sport I know best.
Yep.
And sometimes you get that amateur feel. You know, like the current teams are sort of like half amateurs.
I'm enjoying that, though.
So that's kind of fun, you know, even though because you talked about seeing it all the time. Well,
yeah.
At least we don't have the NHL players in this edition.
Yeah.
So the pros and cons, but you know, it's a sport I know best, and it was on display last night. That's for sure.
It has been entertaining to watch the hockey. I've every night been watching this stuff, and plenty of great stories. Plenty of people who have invested a ton of time in order to achieve these goals. And these aren't people in a lot of cases that are making millions. These are people who are working real jobs like the rest of us and doing whatever they can to represent their country and try to achieve their goals. And you got to respect that. So, and that's on the summer side too. You certainly get that there as well with Summer Olympics and Winter Olympics. Like, this isn't a high paying gig.
No,
but I mean, neither is this.
The medals are priceless.
The medals are priceless. So, with that said, we will conclude another week of Fox on Sports. I'd like to thank everybody here. I'd like to thank Harry Kozlowski for filling up the candy dish and commend him on his choice of Hershey's Nuggets this week. That was greatly appreciated. Bill Jennings, Colleen Richardson, Chris Gentry, always doing a great job. And my co-host, Andrew Hansen, for another awesome week here at the WBNH studios. We'll catch you next week. Actually, that's a lie. It's school vacation week. We're going to take a week off. Come right back the week after you've listened to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.